Discovery's four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle functions.
3, 2, 1, 0, 0,
and liftoff.
Hello, world. We are back after a two-week hiatus. This is the GadgetCast. My name is Gregory McFadden, joined always with my co-host Travis MCP.
Space travel.
I just say space travel.
That's right. You just say space travel, Justine. We appreciate everyone for coming back after we've been gone for a little bit, but you know what? We're here. We're alive. And for the audio, I was just saying on the beforecast, because again, we stream this live on YouTube as we record it. I was just saying that the audio listeners haven't heard from us in a slightly longer than the YouTubers. So here's the thing. You should go, if you don't normally do this, you should go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/gadgetcast, and watch an exclusive video with us and Jonathan Morrison. As if you were listening to the last episode, we talked about wanting to talk to him. A bunch of things happened. And we made it happen the very next day. So make sure you go to youtube.com/gadgetcast. I think the link will be in the show notes and everything. And watch that interview. It was great. I had a great time with Jonathan. What about you?
Yes, always have a good time with Jonathan. It was nice to talk to him. Try and recreate our award-winning interview, which will never see the light of day. But you know, I say release the blurry cut still. I'm still.
Yes.
You know, I'm on board for trending, that. Release the blurry cut. I would be very happy.
That's actually not a bad idea. You had a couple weddings to go to or something. So
a couple, we took a couple weddings,
which is weird. Like, how is that a thing? Is everyone just, I mean, isn't that normally a summer thing?
I didn't go to a couple, but.
Oh, well, I thought you said both weekends you were, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Kind of a weird time of year to be doing that though. Isn't it usually it's summertime when people do that?
I mean, it is summer.
It's not, what are you talking about? It's May. And it, when we did this, it was April. That's not summer.
The wedding was in May, and it is summer. Let's see.
You consider May summer?
Yeah.
When I look outside, there's nothing summery about what's going on.
Well, you live in Seattle. Let's see. Summer starts June 21st, so I guess it's not. Yeah, you know, it's spring. Summer. Spring's a good time for weddings. Spring, summer. Cheaper to get married in, dead of winter, February. So I say save some money.
That's what I say. I mean, if you're going to do it, if you're even going to do something like that, which is kind of a weird thing to do, you should go ahead and do it in a time when it's cheap, because you never know. You might not be with that person very long, so might as well save some money while you're at it.
I did not get married, by the way. People are asking if I got married. I did not get married. Someone I knew got married.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to, it would have been better to let that go for a week or two and get some nice,
get some
cindly
drama, you know. Greg's gadgets, did he get married and who did he marry, and let's find out.
And Travis wasn't invited, so that'd be a whole thing, because be like, oh wow, they do a podcast together and they don't like each other. Which, by the way, was a weird thing that I remember reading, because I used to love the show MythBusters, and then come to find out, I don't know why I thought this was weird. It doesn't seem as weird to me now, especially after doing a podcast with you. That they, not that they didn't like each other, but they didn't really spend any time talking to each other, like at all, outside of the show.
They,
and that struck me as it's not even that. Like, I think they just were workmates. And in the show, you would always think that they were friends or something, but I guess they really weren't. So interestingly, that's not really us. Like, we do talk a little bit more than that, generally speaking. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think we talk more than the MythBuster guys. They don't have time for each other. No,
we have a little time.
I did have a couple jam-packed weeks. I am very tired, if you can't tell on my voice. I feel pretty drained. So I hope GadgetCast is going to get me through, going to get pumped. I think at the end of it, you're just going to see the most energetic Greg that you've ever seen. I have high hopes, Travis.
Yeah, all right. We were going to talk about a couple of things, because I was going to say, let's talk about it now, and then... And then I said, no, let's just do it on the GadgetCast. Real quick, because it's not that important. And it's more important for people watching on YouTube. I was asking Greg if he noticed the difference between my camera. And I got the Elgato Face Cam, which is a webcam. And normally webcams aren't as good as you know, normal cams for, you know, live streaming and stuff. But this was pretty darn good. And I'm actually running it through, and this is kind of where the story comes in. After I got it, I was pretty happy with it, but I wanted to do a little bit more of a background blur. And all the software I had access to, I wasn't exactly happy with it. So I wanted to get a thing, free software called NVIDIA Broadcast. Now, the downside to NVIDIA Broadcast, the upside is it does things like noise removal and all this really cool stuff, and also video removal and all this other really cool stuff, blurs and stuff. The downside is you need an RTX video card. Now, interestingly, you can get video cards nowadays. They are a little bit more expensive than they used to be, but they're not as crazy. It's not as crazy as it used to be. Like, I went on Amazon and got one. So I ended up buying a 3060 for my desktop just to be able to do this blur and noise removal and whatever. But all in all, I'm happy with the end result. And the reason I did this is because eventually I'm going to use the camera I was using as my video camera, as a B camera, for some new stuff I'm going to be working on, hopefully really soon. So, yeah, that's what I've been up to tech-wise. Have you bought anything recently, or is it just you're just waiting for WWDC and all the other shenanigans?
Oh, I do have stories about things that I could have purchased and I wanted to purchase, but
like what? What did you almost buy?
Time where no one can be happy and no one can have joy, including myself.
Well, I feel that's
I've been waiting on a Steam Deck since last summer. I remember vividly pre-ordering it in the madness and the rush, and I actually got through the pre-order pages, and I got the Steam Deck pre-ordered, and I've been waiting all this time because the way they did it was you had to put a $5 registration down to get the privilege to buy this thing, which is just weird to me. Like, let me pre-order it. You send it to me when it's ready. And then what they were doing after that was sending emails to people to get your Steam Deck when it was ready to be purchased. But Steam Valve is a horrible company. They don't know how to do things correctly. So they did not tell you, depending on which configuration you ordered, when it would be shipped to you. So I ordered the highest end model because, you know, I want the best. And that apparently was not going to be in production until later. Like the earlier units already shipped out to people. I would have picked one of those units if I knew.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you kind of just like lose track of things. So I was waiting for this pre-order. I waited for like the first period. I checked when my pre-order was going to be. It was going to be later in the year. I'm like, okay, well, it doesn't seem like this is going to happen for a while. And then I've been like checking my email like pretty much every week periodically, just Steam. I get a lot of emails, so stuff just gets missed sometimes. Sometimes you got to check the junk folder. Mm-hmm. And then one random day, I check my email. It says your Steam Deck is ready to be purchased. And they give you 3 days to purchase it. Mm. And I literally check the email on the day that was the expired day. It was the same day it expired. They actually expired it at like a time slot, like at like 10 o'clock it expires. And it's like, I checked at 11 and I couldn't buy it. So I was very upset with Valve. I thought that was a pretty bad system.
So now what?
I don't know. I guess I can't.
You have to wait. Yeah. You mean you straight up can't buy one, or are you going to get another rotating you back through?
I don't know. It says, your reservation has expired. Would you like to cancel your reservation? So I don't know if I just keep the reservation. Will they email me another one when it's like time to purchase? It's a very clunky system. Nothing's clear. I should probably contact customer service. Maybe they can sort it out. Maybe they'll take pity on me and go, you know what? You can buy one. But with all the supply chain shortages of like getting things, I just have no hopes for it. And I'm just like, well, I don't even want this thing at this point. I already had to wait. And then it's like it was already like an underpowered portable console. The more time that you wait, the more stuff that gets released, the more it just kind of looks like an ancient thing. I said on the record, I think this thing's going to fail. Like, it just looks like something that would fail. But I did want it because I thought it would be cool to just carry my PC library of games anywhere with me. And that would be novelty for a while. But the more I look at it, the more I'm just like, I don't want it anymore.
Yeah, it's that like initial wanting, like Katya says in the chat, that she one time found a super rare doll she was interested in and was ready to pay 10 times retail price to get. I've done things like this before. I've overpaid for things. A lot of times it's something that happens at the beginning of something coming out more so than later, or if something sells out and then you don't know if it's going to come back, and then you have to go to eBay and then pay that whole ridiculous tax. Yeah, I've done that multiple times.
And I don't know if I can get my $5 back when I cancel the thing. Like, I just feel like for putting money down, the system that they incorporated was just not very good. Poorly thought out. Especially because initially they only let you pre-order this thing if you had a Steam account and you have purchased games on the Steam store. So I feel like they already had a method to kind of get rid of a lot of these scalpers. You already had to have it tied to a unique account. That account couldn't just be a random account you made that day. It had to have purchased games. So they already had the system that could get rid of scalpers, and I kind of don't know why they just didn't ship it to me when it was ready and charged the card on file. Like, why did I have to go through another step after that?
Yeah.
I hate it when companies do stupid things like this. And
well, yeah, I mean, it sounds like they were trying to, at one point, stop scalpers, which is cool.
Yeah.
But then it ironically, and this is what happens a lot of times when people optimize for scammers, it actually messes up real customers.
Yeah, and listen, if it was just me being a dummy and missing the reservation, you know, I'd accept that and go, okay, that was my fault. But I like, for months, I've literally been reading people complaining, going, I missed the window. I just didn't check my email for a couple of days. I missed the window. The email was sent to my junk folder. I just checked it. It was been sitting there for like a week, and I couldn't buy it. So it's not just me who made the mistake of not being able to get it. And I just feel like there's a lot of people who really wanted to try out the system. And I get, like, there's supply chain shortages, all this stuff, but making it like this hard to get, I don't want to, like, again, this was a guaranteed purchase. Maybe you're not having trouble selling them, but I was going to buy it. And now at this point, because you made it so hard for me to buy, you've lost my sale. I imagine there's a lot of other people like that too. Who just go, well, it's not worth the hassle. Put me on a list. Send it to me when it's ready. I think that's one of the, you know, I think that's the best thing you could do as a company. Sometimes I don't understand. You go on like a company's website and they have this product ready for purchase. It just says sold out. Even though they're making more, I just don't know why there's not like a list. And it's like, as they come out, we will send it to you. Apple does that, right? Like, you go on the website. Mm-hmm. There may be supply chain shortages. You might not be able to get a Studio Display or a Mac Studio until July. But Apple will let you hit the buy button and they will send it to you when it's ready.
Right.
So I think everything should just work like that.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, it's weird how it seems like some very simplistic things have not been resolved by people who want to take your money, which is kind of ironic. But scammers are like optimized to the gills. Yeah. Like, they know exactly. Speaking of scammers, man, we've had so many of those in my comment section. I think I've actually done a really good. Matter of fact, I know I've done such a good job on my channel of hiding them as much as I can that they've kind of stopped pretending to be me. And by the way, I'm starting to put like pinned comments and saying, if you see anyone saying it's me, don't give them money. Because I've had a couple people tell me that they thought it was me. They'll ask me, have I been talking to you? And I'm like, no, I don't use Telegram or WhatsApp. That's really frustrating on YouTube to go through this. But now they have a new one that's like this website or something where they make it look like they typed a sentence in. It's like technology.new or something like that. And it's something that as a creator, a content creator, you don't think that you have to actually protect your viewership against scams. And the reason why you feel you have to is because they are pretending to be you. And that makes it more personal for me. It's like, it's one thing that here's a link, click it, get scammed. But it's another one to go, I thought I was talking to you. And I've got that a couple times that I feel a little bit bad about that. But I'm also like, I never said that I was going to, you know, I don't know. It's a weird thing and it's getting worse on YouTube.
Yeah, I felt really bad about it because I've had a lot of DMs and a lot of emails come my way, and I check them from time to time, and it's people just going, is this real? And it's like, no, it's not real. Like, yeah, your judgment was right. This is fishy. It's not real. And I was, like, really upset about it for a while because I'm like, I don't want my fans to, like, get duped. But after dealing with it for months at this point, it's kind of just like, well, I've really done my best to block certain words and do all these things that I think is proactive to make this stop. I've done pinned comments in some of my videos saying, like, just like you, like, don't trust these people. But it's also something after months, it's like,
yeah,
I really can't focus energy on doing this because I also look at like the top YouTubers and they are dealing with the same problem. And I feel like they are making less of an effort to actually help people. Like, they're not blocking like the most common words that these people are using. Like, the people on my channel at this point have to be pretty creative to get the scam. They got to say some weird phrases at this point to actually get people, you know. They can't say, like, you can't say congratulations on my channel, which is kind of weird. Like, you can't say congratulations. Like, there might actually be a time where someone might want to say congratulations, Greg, and that will probably get filtered out and I won't
see it.
So, you know, so there's some things that, there's some things on my end that it's like, I really did not want to get rid of the word congratulations, but just noticing all the spam accounts saying, what they usually say is congratulations. I was like, well, I guess you can't say that on my channel anymore.
Or congrats, or hit me up, or whatever.
Sometimes I'll try and
things,
check like the filters and go through them and like, I always do. Okay, some of them. But again, at a certain point, some comments that are meant to, that should be on the page are just not going to be there.
And it's sad because it feels like they won.
They have won in a way. YouTube definitely needs to do something about it. It's been a problem for a very long time now. I, like you, have just random like tech channels in my thing going, you won at this point. Like random scammers, not actual tech channels, but like just not me at this point saying you won. And it's like, it's so weird. Like, what is going on with all this stuff? And I feel bad for people. I get like people fall for things and, you know, YouTube giveaways are a thing. But at the same time, I've also never done a giveaway. So I'm also like, where did you see this giveaway? Just because I got it's, if it sounds too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true. And you shouldn't fall for something like that. So you also have to use common sense on your end. I get for some channels, because some channels do giveaways like all the time. And I feel like at that point it might be like, okay, that might fall for a scam. But for my channel, I've just never done a giveaway, never announced one. I feel like you just have to use your common sense and be like, okay, this is not Greg.
Yeah, it's ironic timing for me because I was doing the game show and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
I feel like for you it's worse because you're doing all these like game shows and giveaway things. So people might actually be like, oh, Travis is gonna give me money, or Travis is gonna the way the scam works too is it's like, hey, you won the iPhone, and you'll go through like these, because people have sent me the screenshots, unfortunately, of them like interacting with these people on like Telegram. Same. Mm-hmm. And the way it seems to go is they go through this whole process. They get all the information, like your shipping address, like they get pretty far. And then they're like, pay me $100 for shipping. And that's when everyone seems to go, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Wow, I got to pay you shipping to win something. And it's like, of course, it's a scam.
Yeah. Well, anywho, if you've been scammed by one of us, definitely. Yeah.
If you've been scammed by one of us, please let us know.
Let us know if you've been scammed.
Let me know. I'll feel very upset. I'll be like, no,
definitely let Greg know if someone has scammed you.
Things, Travis, I tried to purchase. I'm still trying to purchase this. I'm very happy with my studio display. I'm very happy with it. I actually have an extra studio display.
What?
Of scamming. I have an extra studio display that's been sitting in a box since launch. I have not opened it.
Just Why?
Been sitting there. I wanted to use the studio display as like a monitor for my new studio. But I still wanted to have something home. But I didn't want to get like a second studio display for it. Mm-hmm. But when I was doing all the pre-orders and stuff, as you know, going through pre-order rush, sometimes you order like an extra unit because you're kind of like, is this other unit I pre-ordered actually going to come, because I did it in a weird way. So and both came. So I've just been sitting with this extra studio display. As I said kind of in the beginning, there's a lot of shortages right now. So like... Mm-hmm. If you go on eBay and look for like brand new studio display in the box, it's basically selling for like double, like $3,000
for
like the standard model. So I've been kind of like trying to grapple with, should I sell this on eBay? I could probably make a lot of money. Do I want to rip someone off by, making them pay twice the amount of money for a studio display? Probably not. Hmm. Would I make maybe a couple extra hundred on it because... just going through the hassle of like keeping it this long.
Yeah.
Maybe I would. Or maybe I'll just get my money back and then make them pay for shipping. Something like that. I maybe will figure out. But I have talked about this on the show for so long. I feel like maybe people might be interested in an update. We've been talking about like these like TVs, using them as gaming monitors.
These
televisions are so good now. These LG OLED TVs, they have everything you'd probably want for a gaming monitor. They got OLED, HDR, 120 hertz. They fit the bill. But the smallest you could buy was a 48-inch TV. which honestly, it's big. It would be a little too big for my setup. But a lot of people have been thinking exactly like me, and they have been waiting for this mythical 42-inch version of the same LG OLED TV that me and you both have. And it's supposed to come out this month.
Mm.
And other people have gotten like review units of it. I've seen like reviews of it on YouTube at this point.
Yeah.
Actually, behind the scenes, and I'm very upset because I didn't even get a response, but I did contact LG and I was like, I really am interested in this monitor. I really want to do a review on it.
Yeah.
Like, I want to do a review on it from a gaming perspective. Mm-hmm. And also, as like, maybe like, because this is almost like the same price as Studio Display. I think it's like $200 cheaper. Wow. Maybe almost as like a Mac monitor.
Yeah.
Like a different type of monitor that you might want to get that is probably going to end up looking better, way better, and be bigger, and just maybe might be a general better overall choice. But that's supposed to be released this month. And there's listings up on like Amazon, Best Buy, like all the listings are there. But I just don't know when like the actual date is.
So are the reviews, are the reviews good, bad, and different? What are we talking
about? They're mostly good. The big drawback with the 42-inch size is apparently LG was supposed to use like, I hope I'm getting this right. LG was supposed to use like newer panels that got brighter. And apparently on the smaller size TV, the 42-inch, and I believe also the 48-inch, if I'm getting this correctly, they get just as bright as like our models did. So they don't kind of get that newer panel technology to get brighter. And I think it might have something to do with like the heat of like the size of the monitor or something like that. Or maybe it's like a cost thing because they're lower cost panels. But I've just been waiting for this monitor. I feel like I've been talking about this thing for like over a year at this point.
It's been a while.
And this was the month it's supposed to come out. Again, a lack of communication of like, put a release date out. Like, LG must know when this thing is going to hit stores. They must have an idea of when this thing's going to happen. And I've just been like refreshing the pages of like every third party website this whole month, every day, every day. I'm not the Steam Deck I could miss out on. This I've been waiting for so long. I don't want it to sell out and not get my hands on it. So I'm patiently every day going to Best Buy, going to Amazon, B&H Photo. I'm going to websites I wouldn't even normally order a TV on. And I'm just like looking, going, is it available? No, not yet. So maybe by next Gadget Cast, I will have this 42-inch
mythical
LG monitor or LG TV, technically. And I hope I can say like really good things about it, because if I can use that as a gaming plus MacBook setup for home, I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, let me know if that ends up being something that's reasonably good for what you're trying to use it for. It'll be interesting to see. Speaking of new things and things that are coming out, Google I.O. happened. I did not see it, but the Pixel Watch, among other things, were announced. What did you see, or what have you kind of walked away from that's interesting? Besides, by the way, all the things I always like whenever Google does a Google I.O. are all the software things. I think they do amazing things there. But what did you see that particularly amazed you?
I also missed the event, to be honest. So I just kind of caught things from websites and from other people's tweets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very interested in the Pixel Watch because I've always wanted Google to make their own smartwatch. I think it looks interesting. I think for a circular design smartwatch, it's one of the, at least the problem with all this stuff is they've announced it way ahead of time. So there was a lot of hype going into this about the Pixel Watch in particular. And I thought that it was going to be released sometime soon. But what Google did was they basically pre-announced the Pixel Watch and also the Pixel 7 and the Pixel 7 Pro. Mm. And these aren't coming out until September. So they got ahead of any, I guess, leaks. I mean, the Pixel Watch already leaked, but they got ahead of other leaks for like the Pixel 7, Pixel 7 Pro. And they just pre-announced it. They did this also for the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro.
Yep.
I mean, I guess it's cool. I just, for a way to like build up a product and release it, I don't think it's good for Google to announce these things this early. I get that maybe they want to get ahead of leaks. Maybe Apple would want to do this in like a perfect world. But I think they know better that if they announce a new iPhone right now, even though everyone kind of knows in the back of their head a new iPhone is coming, nothing is confirmed. So it just makes like the current models kind of even more undesirable, because you know there's something else coming and you've got a sneak peek at what's coming, and maybe there's something that you're looking forward to with these new phones where you wouldn't purchase a Pixel 6 or a Pixel 6 Pro. So I kind of don't understand the strategy of announcing it this early.
I think they got a lot of positive press when they did it, because it was so interesting to, quote, leak your own stuff. They're getting ahead of it. They're de-incentivizing people to leak more stuff, I suppose. So now the leaks of the design, there's no point in doing it now. It allows them to control the narrative, which I think is kind of smart. And I think it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens moving forward. It seems like this is Google's new thing. Like, this is what they do. I don't see Apple ever doing this, although stranger things have happened, like we'll talk about later with the iPhone. Could Samsung do something similar? I don't see why not. To be honest, like, the whole leak culture thing, which is have been around longer than what we've been talking about, there's been leaks of things for years, but has definitely put a damper on tech. And then tech in general is kind of slowing down in innovation because, well, I should say mobile tech, not all tech, because really the M1 Pro and M1 Max, just that system on the chip, is still pretty evolutionary. I don't want to say revolutionary, we say evolutionary, and still really exciting technology for what it does, especially for the amount of power that it draws. So those type of things are still great. But because we've seen bigger things in the past, that these things aren't as interesting. So I think Google is taking an approach of, hey, we want to take control of the narrative. We don't want it to be this grainy video or have these other channels, you know, leak it and then talk about it. We would rather be able to tell you about it first. And for them, considering, you know, where they are in the marketplace, I think it's kind of smart.
I think this is maybe something Apple might also want to do. I don't know if they would ever do it, though. Again, just because them announcing a product is basically saying, well, the current everyone knows new products are coming out, but it is an admission of this current product we are selling will be outdated.
Yes.
So yes. With Google, it might not be as much of a problem because they're still very much the underdog in all of this in hardware sales. Right. They want to boost up Pixel a lot. This will be their first smartwatch. We'll see if they can get a footing in. I've always wanted them to make a smartwatch because they make Android, they make Wear OS. If they have no skin in the game to make these smartwatches, they're not going to get better. That's why we've seen Samsung make their own smartwatch OS with Tizen OS and all this stuff, because Wear OS was kind of stagnant for a while, which was interesting because in the early smartwatch days, they were ahead of all of this. They had like the Moto 360, which was a very popular smartwatch. That was even before the Apple Watch, and I thought they were ahead of everything. And it was weird to see them kind of fall by the wayside. Going back to the Pixel Watch, I'm very interested to see how this turns out when it actually comes out and when we can actually use it. From what I can gather from the announcements, the focus wasn't necessarily so much on the Pixel Watch because it is just so far out. They showed the design. But it was more about the ecosystem in general. Google is trying to build this ecosystem. We talk about the Apple ecosystem all the time. We now talk about the Samsung ecosystem. Google is also trying to get all these products to work really well together. So if you buy a Pixel phone, if you buy a Pixel watch, if you buy this new tablet they announced, a Pixel tablet, all those things will work so well together that you'll want to get all of them. And then when it's time to go buy another product, you will look at Google's options first before going for something outside of the ecosystem. That's one of Apple's biggest strengths. We talk about it all the time. I don't know how well it work for Google at this point, though. I feel like the big thing that Android misses out on is the main operating system. I feel like the only two people that have that is Apple and Microsoft with Windows and Mac OS. I know those are like dwindling, you know, maybe everyone's not getting a Mac, maybe not everyone's getting a Windows computer, but for like power users and stuff like that, it's such an important part of the ecosystem to have those products. And with Google, I just don't know what exactly their strategy is with the new Pixel tablet, especially considering they tried to make a tablet not too long ago and it just crashed and burned. It failed miserably to the point where they basically said, we're not going to make tablets anymore. It was such a failure.
All of them were.
Yeah. But the last one in particular, like, it was really expensive. It was supposed to be like an iPad Pro competitor. No one really bought it. It was on like fire sale within like months of being released. And I want to say, like, even in less than a year, this thing was like discontinued and just we're not going to do tablets anymore. And as you know, I think Chromebooks have been way more successful than any of these other tablet ventures. And it's weird for me to see Google going back into trying to make the tablet a thing after they wrote it off. And Android tablets, I feel like, don't have the best starting point anyway. I know some people really like Samsung's tablets, but just the Android tablet in general, besides Samsung, Samsung always seems to kind of have like, well, there's the Samsung side, but it's always like its own little thing because they kind of do some custom software and stuff for that. But Android tablets in general, they don't have the strongest software support, the strongest ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And maybe Google's coming back with a more cohesive vision this time. Maybe it'll be different this time. But it's weird to see them getting back into this particular use case, especially, I would say, when we are seeing a decline in the iPad as well, which would be the most popular tablet. It almost seems like the thinking right now is, well, do we even need tablets anymore? Ever since the release of the M1 and going back into the Mac, it seems like most of the advantages that the iPad used to have, ignoring the software, just like the hardware advantages of, oh, the battery life's going to last me all day. I don't have to deal with a lot of like cruft and stuff like that. I feel like the Mac, it's still more complex. You still have to deal with a lot more, but I feel like it's just recaptured a large segment of people who were buying iPads to replace these devices.
Well, so there used to be a lot of different Android tablets, and while there's a lot of little kind of inexpensive Chinese ones, you really, if you look at the Android tablet kind of world, which, by the way, I love tablets. I think I've made that pretty clear. I love tablets. But if you look at the world, you basically have two real sections. You have kind of the higher end Samsung stuff, and then every once in a while some weird company will make one. But it's basically Samsung high end and then everyone else low end, which includes Amazon, who probably sells the most out of anybody, is my guess, of their Fire tablets. So it's like high end, low end. While you can buy medium end stuff, I don't think those things sell particularly well. I don't know where this, how did they say how much this thing's going to be?
I don't think they announced any
prices. I don't think they did. In which case, it's like, what are they really doing? I'm really, really curious.
Based on how it looks, I will say it does not look premium to me. It doesn't look premium. It looks mid-range maybe, or low end. It for some reason, I look at it and I just don't imagine it costing that much money. But we will see.
We shall see. I think in general, I don't know that this is a good idea, and I love tablets. I mean, coming from someone who likes tablets a lot and thinks that just about everyone should have one, especially if you're doing any kind of browsing and stuff at home, I think it's a better experience than on a phone. I don't get this, and I don't know that it's the right move for them. But it's Google. They might be using it as much of a, you know, trying to get more information about, you know, getting more data on users than anything. Like, it might just not matter if they sell a lot. Like, that might be irrelevant, which might be the same thing you could say about their Pixel phones. Maybe it's not relevant if they sell a lot. Maybe it's more about the data collection. I don't know. We'll have to see. But it is interesting that thing exists, especially since, like, you know, Renee says, look, get yourself someone that looks the way I look at my iPad Pro. I love my iPad. It's my functioning device, and my iPad Mini is my everything else. And the base iPad, I really, really enjoy. And
iPad is, I love that device so much.
It's great. It's fantastic. Yeah.
The new Air, I feel like people just dismiss it, especially like tech YouTubers, because it's like, oh, we got the iPad Pro. Who's buying this thing? But when you really look at it, $600, you get an M1. It's quite the steal for a product. The storage is a little low, but you know, if you can dismiss that, it's a really compelling product. I want to address someone in the chat teaching. I got this comment on my YouTube video. I don't know if you left this comment, but I got to disagree with this person. They're saying the iPad sales was due to chip shortage, not a decline in demand. The budget iPad has had shipping delays, and those are pretty popular. I just don't think this is true, because you go on Apple's website. I'm looking at the budget iPad right now. It is what's the date? It is May 15th. You can get this iPad delivered on May 18th. You can pick it up today in an Apple store. I looked at mostly the other iPads too when I was doing my research for this video. They're not facing the shipping delays that some of these Macs are. You go try and buy a Mac Studio, you're waiting 2 months. You go and try and buy the 14 and 16 inch MacBook Pro. These were released like 6 months ago at this point, and they are still delayed. You want a 14 inch MacBook Pro, Travis? How long do you think you have to wait? This was released 6 months ago.
4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, July 7th to July 22nd. That range. July. So I would disagree with that. I don't think the iPads are quite as supply constrained as the rest of Apple's products. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's more of... I think the iPad was in a much stronger position when it was the only product that had... or when it... not the only product, but when it had Apple Silicon and the Macs didn't. And there was this general shift, because I felt it too. I used to use my iPad so much more than I do now. I have to be honest with you. Besides like reviewing the iPads and stuff like that, I kind of barely don't touch mine at this point.
Yeah.
I'm planning on making a video about that in particular, right? Like that subject about the iPad, where it is right now. And that actually used to not be the case for me. I mm-hmm. used to not even own a MacBook at one point because I liked using my iPad so much more. Mm-hmm. It was so much faster. Mm-hmm. It was so much simpler to use that I would use a Mac desktop to like do like the editing and stuff like that. But for casual use, I would always use my iPad.
Yeah, like of course.
In 2017, I was always using my iPad. Mm-hmm. And as soon as Apple released those M1 Macs and I got the MacBook Air and it had double the battery life of the iPad, you opened it up, it just turned on instantly. All the benefits that the iPad had because it was running Apple Silicon, it was an immediate shift. I went, well, I don't really need the iPad anymore. Everything that I can do, I can do on my Mac, and there's some things I can't do on the iPad. So why should I bother using the iPad? The only advantage would be, oh, it has a touchscreen. But as the phones have gotten bigger as well, it's just something I don't reach for as much anymore, where it's like, oh, I need a big touchscreen. Most of the time, it's like, if the phone's already in my hand, sometimes there's just no point to go grab the iPad. And I know people who like iPads. It's I'm not saying it's a bad product. I still think they're... I mean, Travis uses one. I think they're great still.
But I don't even I don't use it as much as I used to, which is kind of crazy. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because my usage of different things is different. There's nothing, it's not like it's lost functionality or anything like that at all. You're right. If I even look at my iPad mini, I don't use it very often, and it's probably not even on the latest update. I mean,
I think what it is the phone's got big enough. The iPad used to live in the middle. It used to be this mm-hmm. device that was like, okay, my phone's too small to do this. I don't want to go on my laptop. It's too much of a hassle. I'm gonna grab my iPad. Mm-hmm. And that used to be in the middle. It used to do some things better. The phones have gotten so big at this point that I can pretty much do most of the things comfortably that I would used to use my iPad for, like going through emails, typing up some stuff. I could do that on my phone pretty easily. What the iPad should be at this point is more than what it is. And it's mm-hmm. not for a lack of hardware. These things are still, hardware-wise, really impressive. Having an M1 in the iPad Air and in the iPad Pro, it's just insane that these thin devices have that much power, like real computing power behind them. Mm-hmm. But the software just hasn't really caught up. And there's many different interpretations of what that is. For some people, that just means, oh, can I run Final Cut on it? That would be great. I don't care if it doesn't have multitasking or windowing, or if I can get into my files, can it run this application? No, it can't. Okay, I'm going to go with the Mac. For other people, it is multitasking and doing like one example I think of all the time that's actually pretty simple, and it's really weird when you think about it on the iPad. When you go on any other computer, like a Mac or a Windows-based computer, and you play audio. So if you play audio on your phone, say you're listening to music and you open up YouTube and you play something, it can only do one at a time. The YouTube app will take over, the music mm-hmm. app will take over. Sometimes when you're scrolling Twitter, your feed will get hijacked and you're listening to music and it will stop your music
to play what's ever on Twitter.
Yeah.
On a Mac, that never happens. You can play your music. You could play that Twitter thing. You could play a YouTube video. You have all this different way to route the audio. And on iPads, that's still not a thing. And that's something that I think is pretty basic at this point, where it feels limiting. It feels like I should be able to do that.
But I think it's purposeful.
Well, I know Apple wants to keep it simple.
Right.
And I know there's a lot of users who value that simplicity. Maybe the iPad isn't for those tasks. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like they have to become something else, because I think the sales data is just proving it out. They're becoming less... I feel like the Mac should not be selling more than the iPad. I feel like the iPad's a newer product. The Mac should be legacy. We should be moving over maybe to new ways of using our computers. But that was the case for a little while, but now it's reversed again. The Macs are making more money than the iPads. And if you look at the charts of Apple's last quarter of what everything they sold, the iPad is the lowest thing they sell out of everything.
Wow,
they make more money on iPhones, more money on Macs, more money on wearables, more money on services. If they had to cut one product just based on money, it would be the iPads at this point.
Well, let's talk about one thing they did cut, probably over money, which is the iPod. The iconic iPod, the thing that really started... No, okay, it didn't... some people say, well, there was MP3 players before. I get it. Yeah, of course. There were other MP3 players. But the iPod is undeniably something that moved the needle in mobile music. I mean, it did. I don't care if you like Apple or not. iPod. And when people were buying these things that weren't iPods, they would call them iPods, you know, when they didn't know any better. They're, hey, can you, do you have a cheap iPod? It's not really an iPod. It's like one of those little things they used to come out with that I used to buy back in the day because I didn't want to pay all the money for an iPod. But it's over. The iPod Touch, as soon as they're sold out of them, they're done. Sometimes I'm surprised that they even still exist now. And it's interesting that people made such a big deal about it, because you would almost think something like that, yeah, exactly, if there are podcasts before GadgetCast, does it even matter? Yeah, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there, it doesn't matter. The question is, first of all, how did anyone even notice that was a thing? Because I'm sure they didn't send out a press release. Was someone just sitting there refreshing the page for frickin' iPod Touches? Like, how did that become a thing? And secondarily, do you think, Greg, that there is still a use, could there still be a use now for an iPod, or is this well overdue?
Well, there was a press release.
Was there?
It was called The Music Lives On. That was the press release. And it was all about the iPod's history and how they're discontinuing it.
But why send out a press release about discontinuing something? Because they want people to make content?
I think it's just because it was such an important product. As Renee said, they had supplies left that maybe they just want to clear. By the time they say, hey, this is going away, they sold out once they said that. So they cleared the inventory.
Smart.
So I think they know what they're doing. Mm. It's obviously a product that doesn't need to exist anymore.
Yeah.
Your phone does everything that the iPod does and more. Mm. And everyone at this point almost has a phone. And even if you didn't have a phone, I think there's better products that would give you a better experience than what an iPod used to do. So instead of getting an iPod, just get that budget iPad. Way better experience if you want to listen to music. Way better experience if you want to play games on your phone. So I think its purpose has obviously been filled. I have one of the last iPods. I started using it. I updated it after they announced that it was discontinued. And talk about a product that is just not, it's not really even a good experience. You use that iPod, the last iPod Touch, and you can see the battery percentage just ticking down as you use it. The battery life is so bad on it. And it's one of the only iOS devices I've used that I start holding it and I use it for 10 minutes and it's hot on the battery.
Oh,
like it's like burning up. I think they put the last, it's very thin. It's very small. It's still 4-inch display size. And the last update to it was, I believe, an A10 chip. So I think it was just the constraints of that body with that chip and just the way modern apps are running on it. Mm. It's not a good experience at all. So it served its purpose. Does anyone need an iPod? I'm sure someone's going to come out and go, I used it for this, I used it for that. But in the grand scheme of things, as a product that sells a lot of units and most people use, its time has come and gone.
How much were they, 200?
200, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not much more, and you can get at least an SE, an iPhone SE, and get all those features and more. Yeah, I mean, it's an end of an era. I don't know if there's a lot to say about that, but it's it was interesting how much news it made. So I guess that makes sense that they – I did not know they sent out a press release. Apple doesn't send me press releases. One more thing before I get into my little personal stuff at the end. iPhone with USB-C. I think we're looking at iPhone 15. Thoughts about this, Greg? Do you – I mean, it looks like – I was going to say, do you believe it? I guess at this point you probably should. What are your thoughts on this? What's your gut instinct?
I always never saw the point of going to USB-C for Apple. I actually thought it would probably end up causing more harm than good for most iOS users, because at this point, if you've been on Apple's platform for a while, you probably have a lot of Lightning chargers. I remember when they switched from the 30-pin connector, which was this really big, chunky connector. It should have been switched. It was a bad connector for the iPhone, and they switched over to Lightning. It was much smaller. It was reversible, which was really cool, like USB-C, and people were complaining because for most normal people, they just saw this as an extra way for Apple to get more money out of them. Oh, when I buy my new phone, I have to go get a new cable. All these accessories, all these chargers. At the time, iPod docks were a thing. I have to go out and buy new versions of that. So I think when Apple does switch over to USB-C, if this is true, I think for most users, they aren't going to go, oh, wow, look at the benefits of USB-C. I think most users are going to go, I have to buy a new cable. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. So I think initially that's probably going to be the initial reaction from mainstream people. I think people who are into tech like us are going to welcome it because every other device we have at this point is USB-C. So if I can charge my Android phone, my iPad, my Mac, and my iPhone all on the same cable, I'm happy. And that's literally what's going to happen. I'm going to be able to go on a trip, just pack one cable and not worry about it. Whereas now I gotta have a Lightning cable. I got a USB-C cable. Okay, now I'm good. So ultimately, I think it's good. I didn't even think they really needed to switch to USB-C. I didn't think it was a big deal. But my argument completely shifted when they brought over ProRes video to the phones last year. And those file sizes were so big to the point where most people aren't transferring files off their phone. But as soon as you introduce a feature like that where now you have to wait hours to transfer footage that should take a minute because you're using this older connector. At that point, the argument of keeping the connector, it loses all of its validity to me. It's time to switch. If you're going to make data transfer a feature and you have a slow data transfer, Lightning is on USB 2.0, Travis, the iPhones. 2.0, not even 3.0, 2.0. So that's when I went, okay, they need USB-C on the phones.
Well, so yeah, it's interesting. I remember a couple years ago I did the Lightning versus USB-C transfer off of an iPad, and it was an order of magnitude slower and longer. Like I think the transfer on USB-C was like 4 or 5 minutes, and Lightning was like 20 something minutes or 30 minutes. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a big deal, especially when you start implementing things like ProRes. But what about like 8K video, which will eventually come because Apple will do it at some point because it's just expected, right? So yeah, at some point you got to do that. I blame this on Apple. First of all, I don't have a problem with it going to USB-C. I'm totally fine with it. It's continues to evolve and get, you know, more and more features over time. And I think it's good for consistency. However, if Apple didn't want to do this, and I believe a lot of this has to do with the EU kind of enforcement of, if you're not aware, for people listening, a lot of countries in the EU have a law that says, you know, a phone must. Now, I'd like to see the exact wording on this, but I'll paraphrase that it must have USB-C. The actual wording might be something slipperier, where if you put in a dongle, you might be able to get away with it. I don't know exactly what the exact wording is, but the implication is that every phone needs to have USB-C. And I think this actually has a big This is a big part of Apple potentially moving over. There was already a lot of check marks as to why to go to USB-C, but this is just an additional one. But this is, Apple can blame this on themselves. Lightning 2.0 could have come out 3 years ago. They could have been really working on it years and years and years ago and done that, and they just didn't. And whatever the reasons are behind the scenes, their choice was to either they tried and we don't know about it and it just never came out. Whatever the case may be, it never came out. That's on Apple. So now you're in a point where you're painting yourself in a corner. You got to go USB-C. I don't know if you have to pay a percentage to someone for using that sort of, there's all that licensing stuff sometimes. I don't know if there is or not, but regardless, like, you're now in this situation. Having said that, it's not a terrible situation. It's not a terrible situation. It's a situation where you already have devices in your lineup with USB-C. So now you're just unifying everything. So it's actually not that bad. So you're not really losing anything if you're the company. You know, you're actually just moving towards everything in your your lineup having the same connector, which is what you kind of want anyway for ease of use. At the end of the day, I think data transfer is going to be one of the least used aspects of it for a phone. I think some of us will use it for that, but most people won't. It's just charging. So for them, it's like just a different charging cable, but it's the right thing to do. They, like I said, they could have made a competing standard if they wanted to, and because they didn't, here we are. So is it going to happen? Probably, maybe, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. Last year we were positive we were getting these flat Apple Watch 7s, and we know what the Apple Watch 7 looks like. So, I mean, who knows? And we're talking about something like over a year away. So anytime someone says, oh, in a year or two, this is going to happen, I'm like, okay, bro, what's the lottery number while you're at it?
Yeah. I think it makes sense. There's actually rumors this year, which will be funny if it turns out to be true, that they actually did make at one point a 3.0 lightning cable that was for the first iPad Pro, because obviously you need faster transfer for a Pro device. So the rumor this year was that the lightning ports in like the 13 Pro were going to be 3.0. So it'll be funny if they make a big stink about, oh, we have 3.0 in the lightning port for this. Then next year, we have USB-C.
Which might happen. I mean, listen, I've told the story a million times, man. That iPad 3 that most people don't know nothing about, trust me, I know because I bought it when it came out. That thing lived shorter than anything else in the history of Apple hardware, man. I was hot. Just look that up. iPad 3. And then the iPad 4 came out like 6 months later. I was hot about that. So let us know. I mean, listen, leave us voicemails and messages and emails about this. We'll definitely be talking about this as we get further along. I think USB-C is the shizzle. I think it's a good thing, and I'm waiting for it. I'm here for it.
Yes, I welcome it as well.
I was going to talk about something else. Did you have something else you want to talk to before I spiel about content?
No, go ahead.
All right. So first of all, definitely appreciate Rene Ritchie for being in my latest and what will probably be my last game show video. That was a series of videos that I was really happy with, really proud of, and excited to share because I thought it was unusual, interesting, entertaining, and fun. And the people who watched those videos left comments that lined up with that exact thought. I think I produced the video that I wanted to with the kind of abilities that I had. And I'm pretty proud of all of them. I think they all had really good moments. Greg was in one, of course. He's one of the first ones. But it's just not performing in a way that makes it kind of feasible moving forward. So that will probably be the last one. The iPhone Switch videos I've been doing, there's one more of those. And then I'm going to talk about... I'll probably wait until next week. But I recently sent my dad an iPhone. And I have a video coming out about that. I want to talk about what it's like to have a parent switch to an iPhone and the reasons that I did it. I do want to talk about that on GadgetCast, but wait till next week. But I will say this. I have three videos left that I have in mind that I'm going to make. And I think they're all creative in different ways. They all follow kind of the same things I've done before, but they're all pretty creative and pretty fun. But I'll be honest, Greg, I don't really have not only any more ideas after that, I don't really have a lot of motivation beyond that. And that's different than when I've made these texts and phone calls and stuff to Greg and I was frustrated and upset and depressed and mad. I don't actually have any kind of those feelings, which worries me. Because here's the thing. I'm kind of like, eh. And when this happens to me, I stop doing things. For example, when I became overwhelmed and kind of like about doing a podcast, I thought I would take 3 months off. I took 7 years off. And then I came back, tried it for a month, and then left again until GadgetCast. So I mean, like when my mindset gets like this, I leave. So instead of like leaving creating, which I don't really want to do, there's a part of me that's like, oh crap, after these three, I may not just want to do any more videos. I don't want to do that. So I'm going to try to do a new YouTube channel that's not tech. I'm going to dive in head first into that and see what happens. But as for tech, I don't know, Greg. I have no interest in leaving GadgetCast. I like GadgetCast. I think even if I wasn't actively uploading on my main channel for tech, I would probably still do GadgetCast. But I'm kind of at the point where I think when emotionally you're like struggling with something, and especially a lot of tech YouTubers are saying their views down and stuff, and I was, you know, venting to you, I was venting because I still cared and because I wanted things to perform. But at this point, it doesn't even bother me anymore, which is like, eh. So I don't know what's going to happen from this point forward after these three. I really don't know. But I mean, there is the off chance that these are the last three. I don't know. At the end of the day, I'm going to stick around for GadgetCast for as long as Greg decides to keep on coming. Then we'll see what happens after that. I mean, what are you, I know you're doing well. I mean, well, tech in general isn't doing like fantastic, but how has your process been lately?
That's interesting. I don't think I'm doing that well, honestly, but, I think that's also because I haven't been putting out a lot of videos recently.
Yeah.
But that also has to do maybe more with the creative drain than anything else. I've also been very busy, but I've also been, if I'm being honest, I've been a little bit drained creatively at certain points. And I think the big problem for me at this point is, how do I want to say this? I don't know.
Just say it the way it's in your head. I just did.
Oh, the way it's in my head. Oh, I don't know. I don't know if that could air. No, I feel like I've always made... I feel like for the most part, my channel has a pretty good variety for the typical type of Apple tech channel.
Yeah.
I feel like I kind of do it all. I'll do analysis videos. I'll do a leak video. I'll do a review. I'll do a tips and tricks. I got a pretty good catalog of stuff that I do. I've always felt, especially early on, I felt like that was one of my strengths, looking at other channels who would just kind of do one thing. They would only do iOS update videos, or they'd only do leak videos. They only do rumor videos. But I found recently that the videos that do the best for me are anytime I talk about a product that is not out yet.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's analysis or a leak video or just my thoughts on it,
mm-hmm.
I find that those generally do better than any review I put out.
Hmm.
Sometimes the tips and tricks honestly do the best for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just something I can't do every day because it's like there's only so much I can tell you about your phone before I start repeating myself. So those are more as new iOS updates come out, I could do that again. But it's not something I can continue to do every day. So my struggle is right now is that in the time that I've been doing YouTube, which is what, 5 years at this point, there's a lot of new channels and a mm-hmm. lot of channels have shifted their coverage
mm-hmm.
to basically be Apple leak channels, just Apple leak channels.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's more competition in that space. And I think I've said this on GadgetCast before. My biggest problem is that I don't want to be lumped in maybe with those channels because they are very sensational.
Mm.
I saw you respond to a tweet today to a channel that is super, super, super sensational and almost everything they say is a complete lie.
Yep.
I don't want to be lumped in with those channels because I did a leak video the other day on M2 Max and that's a topic that my audience loves. They'll eat up that video. I know it's going to do well. They're very interested in this product.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of demand for it. But I saw a comment there, and this was from a troll. I looked at his past comments. This guy's been hating on me for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But there were people agreeing with him under it, going, why are you making this video? This is the same video you made. It's people aren't going to come watch your channel anymore because you already made this video. And it's all leaks and no one cares about that or I don't know, something like that. But it was, they were basically lumping me together with these other channels.
That they didn't you don't look want at to be a me part
as
of.
The person.
Right.
They looked at the whole swath of these channels. They went, you made this video already. And I went, I literally have not made... There are times where it's like, yeah, I made a very similar video. I literally did not make this video yet. It was just a brand new video that I really didn't cover the topic before. Because it was like on the M2 MacBook Pro. So I've covered like M2 MacBook, all that stuff. But they were lumping me together with all these other channels that... And I think they feel this as well, so I don't think they're going to be upset if I say this. I feel like they have been controlled by the algorithm to a point where they are making the same video over and over and over. I don't think it's a spot they want to be in. I don't know if they have the courage to not make those videos anymore because the views are just too good.
Yeah.
Like the views are really good. And I just look at it and I don't want to be lumped in with that. Yeah. I don't want to be a channel that makes iPhone 14 with as the topic every day.
Right.
That sounds miserable to me. I could not do that.
So here's interesting. Renee says something in the chat, which Jonathan Morrison has kind of, the vibe is similar, where he says he would watch a Uncle Roger style, Greg from GadgetCast style, cancel everyone series, which... You know, when you, I, and Jonathan Morrison were talking California, like he likes seeing you out of your shell. I've said this to you for a long time. I think that you have a really entertaining style that is unlikely to be as appreciated as it could be while you're in tech. And I feel the same thing about myself. I feel the exact same way about myself. I feel like there's a whole side of me that is a much larger channel from an entertainment perspective than tech will ever allow me to be. And I think that same thing could be said for you. So it does sound like we're pumping each other up and stuff, but the reality, I think it's real. I think anyone who watches any of our stuff knows that. And, you know, if that's the case, maybe we just find that other thing. I know for you, like you're in a different situation than me in that like all of your money comes from YouTube, right? That's actually almost very little of my money comes from YouTube, thank God, because right now I'd be broke. I'd be living at your house. The reality is I need to do something that's going to make me feel like I'm putting, like I had more fun doing the videos that unfortunately did not perform well than any of the stuff that did perform well over the last year. Easy. And let me ask you a question. For example, that 80s commercial thing, which I don't even remember which video you put that in.
Yeah.
Did that video do well, first of all, just for you? No. Okay. So you say it didn't well. But when you were done editing it and watching it, how did you feel?
Oh, very fulfilled. I had a blast doing that video, and yeah. I like doing that skit. And
imagine if you did a video and you felt like that, which I've felt that way about some of my content that I've done more recently. But instead of just knowing that that's the only good part you're going to get out because the views aren't going to be there, that the views were good too, and the engagement was good too. Like that would be the dream job. And I feel like as a creator, and we talk about this sometimes, I know as a viewer, I would watch people say stuff like, oh, the views aren't there. And I'm like, bro, you're getting like 10,000 views. It seems like a lot. But there comes a point where it's not just your expectation of yourself to do better, but like without a certain number of views, like you can't do anything. Like you can't get sponsorships. You can't grow. You can't, you know, sustain anything. You can't hire people. You can't do the things that you want to be able to do. I feel like for me, these next three, I don't know if they're going to be my last three, but because I'm sure something will come up and I'll throw out a video, but I think they might be the last three, like what I do regularly, like every week or two, you can see a couple of videos from me. This might be the last three that are like regularly coming out. Now, someone said, is GadgetCast going? The GadgetCast not going away. Here's the thing about GadgetCast. Here's a really interesting thing about GadgetCast. When it does eventually go away, which it will, because at least one of us is going to die, right? I mean, I like worst case scenario, like if we just did it until one of us died, that's it. It dies, right? That's it, right? Let's
hope it's not around that long.
It's not going to be. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you a heads up because I'm pretty sure I know how this is going to end. Neither Greg will I will know that it's going to end. We're going to do an episode. We're going to end it. We're going to say we see you next week, and then we won't be back. But it won't be because... we're mad or upset, something's going to happen. We'll be busy and then we'll just, oh, let's do it next week. Let's get together next week. And it's just going to keep happening until we just don't get an opportunity to make another GadgetCast. So, you know, they're unlikely that we will ever do a goodbye GadgetCast episode because we won't know it's the last one. Do you disagree or agree, Greg?
No, I'm too much of a showman. There will be a last GadgetCast. What, are you crazy? Yeah, I'll milk it. Of course. I'll drag you. But if there isn't a GadgetCast for like 2 months, I'm going to be like, all right, Travis, one more show. Let's end it.
One more show.
We'll do it in person or something. I don't know. I want to end it.
The reality is Greg and I
hate when stories don't have an ending. That's the worst.
We'll do the Sopranos thing, right?
Yeah.
So the reality about GadgetCast is it's grown a friendship between me and Greg that I actually did not expect. Like I consider Greg to be a friend. We hopefully have plans for the future to do things like in person and stuff. So I don't know. We'll do things. And I suspect that'll continue for a while. So I'm not going anywhere as far as GadgetCast goes. I don't know about Greg, but I have no interest in going anywhere. I can spend an hour a week doing this, no problem. And with, you know, if some of the things we've talked about in the past come to be, maybe this gets better. I don't know. Greg and I have had a lot of discussions about life things. Who knows? I mean, who knows? Literally had a conversation the other day with someone about something like that, Greg. So I don't know. I don't know.
All I will say on my end is that I still do enjoy tech. I do enjoy it. But I don't see myself stopping doing tech anytime soon, even if I pursued something else. I still do enjoy whatever video I put out there. I wouldn't be making the video otherwise. There's some aspect of it that I must be enjoying because there's tons of videos that I've thought I should make and I just never get around to it. 'Cause it's like, I just don't want to do it. And there's a lot of other things I've been working on that I think will eventually come to fruition that will snowball into making this process a little bit easier for me. Mm-hmm. But I am concerned about just tech in general and the just general content direction of most channels. Mm. I posted this on Twitter, I think like a couple weeks ago, and I just feel like a lot of channels are taking the easy route right now. And you could lump me in that too, maybe, because I fully admit the videos I do that are the easiest for me to make at this point get the most views and the most traction. Mm-hmm. If I work that IMAX skit took me forever to work on, and the video itself took me a while to work on. It was a multi-day process, but I can pump out a video in 4 hours that I know will get more views. I just know it will. Yep. It's just the topic of the video, mm-hmm. the whole flow of it, the interest in it, mm-hmm. it will get more views and it will take me significantly less work. I can enjoy the rest of my day. I feel like most channels have realized that by now. And mm-hmm. I think there's a large number of channels that do what I do that are always taking the easy way. But I think long-term, it will negatively impact not only their channels, but I think the entire tech community. And I think it's almost at that point right now where the entire tech community has just been watching pretty much the same content over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's other factors too right now. Again, there's shortages.
Sure.
There might not be things to even buy at this point, so why even bother watching a review? There's no reason to get hyped over things when you can't go out and buy them. But I just feel like we're on this cycle of we're exhausting the same content over and over. And I think the tech audience is too smart. It would work on other audiences. It would. The type of content these people are making, if it wasn't in tech, it would work on other audiences. But the mm-hmm. tech audience is too smart. And what I think we are doing is gaining new viewers, but we're also turning away our most loyal viewers. And over time, I think it's a disaster for those channels. I think it will eventually come back to bite. I think if there's no content shift in like the next year, I can see a couple channels that I know right now that I would just predict I don't think would do well, because I think people will get sick of it. And I know YouTube, for the most part, your subscribers really aren't making up the bulk of, and that's true for me too, it's new viewers. But eventually, mm-hmm. you do run out of new viewers. It is more like the subscribers come back. And when the subscribers don't come back and you're just relying on new viewers, I feel like that's when it all starts to fall apart.
Yeah, because you got to be good and interesting, and you can't do the same old. And as Renee says, the bill always comes due. And you know, I saw the jump the shark moment. I saw it. And I remember as it was happening, I'm going, this is ridiculous. And things already were kind of like, this is kind of slowing down, and things don't feel like there's interesting anymore. Here's what had happened. And I'm not blaming him. And I'm not saying that he is at fault for this, but this was the moment. right before the iPhone 13 came out, we got iPhone 14 leaks. And it was at that moment that I was like, this is dumb. And again, I wasn't mad at him for it. It had nothing to, I even made a video that day trying to take advantage of the views, which did not work. But I remember on Front Page Tech when that came out, I was like, what are we doing? What is this? And it was ever since then, I've been questioning, like, am I doing tech because I like it or because I like the views or what? And it was always a mixture because I love tech. I got, have you seen this room, Greg? You see this stuff? I most mostly video games, but if you see my house, I got so much tech. I love tech. That's not the problem.
By the way, that video is also 100% false at this point. Nothing is true in that video. Yeah,
what was, I don't remember. What was in that video? It was supposed to be
the iPhone was going to not have a camera bump anymore. The camera bump is significantly larger based on the current leaks. It's going to have a punch hole display, one single punch hole. It does not have it has like an eye hole.
That's true.
It was going to look like the iPhone 4 based on all current leaks. It will not look
that's up. Right.
There was literally no valuable information in that video. If you were so going funny. Back and looking at it, despite all the hype it had around it, it was actually,
that's interesting.
It was actually probably, besides the name, probably 100% false. Like all viable information.
That's really interesting. I had not even thought about that. Yeah. But at any rate, this is why I am hoping. Wait, here's my last thing. I'm going to end it on this because I want to, you know, we'll see where I am when I start to do this. I should have already started this new channel, and I've talked to you for over a year about starting your new channel. So I have this channel figured out. I have 21 video ideas. I won't use all the ideas, but when it's funny because I couldn't think of 21 ideas to do on my current channel, but these video ideas came quick to me. I was like, let me try this new channel. Boom, brrr, I had a whole bunch of ideas. And I'm like, that means something. But here's what's happening. I'm second guessing myself. And I think I'm second guessing myself more than before I started this channel, when I had no experience. I have more experience now than I did when I started my current channel. I have better chance for success now knowing what I know than when I started the channel that I'm on now. Yet I'm doubting myself even more. I'm like, maybe I'm wrong about this. So it's interesting because I almost feel like I'm going to be trapped, but I need to go for it. I absolutely have to. I have so much already on the line.
I feel the same way about starting a new channel. I know infinitely more than I did when I first started out, but it came from such a pure place when I first started my channel. It just came from, I want to upload a video and see how it goes. Yeah. So it's a totally different mindset now when you're actually aiming for it to be a success rather than, it's a whatever. I'm just going to record myself. I'm going to give my thoughts. It's free. Whatever. Who cares if it does well? Oh, it did. It got 100 views. Whoa. So the stakes are totally different when you're approaching it going, I want this to be successful. I think, and it's so hard to do at this point because you're just approaching it from a point of, I want it to be successful. I think you would just have to do it for the fun of it. And you just have to kind of let go of, will this be successful? Obviously, do everything in your power, that use every trick in the book that you know at this point to make it successful. But at the end of the day, you have to do it because you want to do it. I also think, because we're ragging on tech so much, I also think the grass is always greener on the other side. I think there will, true, no matter what channel you do, I think 2 years into it, you will go, I'm running out of ideas. It's more stressful than it initially was, because when you start out on any new, you know, if I started a tech channel today, I would have all these videos I've never done before. All the way I do a video would be totally different. I've never reviewed a product. How would I approach that? But after doing it for 5 years, even if it's a new product, there's this formula that you've already laid for yourself where even if it's new and exciting, and I had so much fun reviewing every Apple Silicon Mac to where I thought they were so new and exciting. And I got so excited for those products. There still is this kind of formula of, I've been here before. I've done this already. Even though these products are new and interesting to me, and I think they're so important, I've done this video on the Intel MacBook in a way. You know, it's already kind of been done, even though I'm still excited. I'm still not jaded about these products. There is this kind of sense of, this part of it is the job.
Right.
It's not all the fun that it used to be when you weren't doing it for money, or there wasn't some sort of success metric tied to it, or you weren't worried about your view count dipping. So I think that eventually will happen to all content. I think I've just seen too many creators in different niches, when they talk honestly about it, it just eventually, it becomes your job. But I think you also have to take perspective. And Travis is probably in a, again, he said he's in a different area because it isn't his job. He makes his money somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But you also have to realize if you are lucky enough to make it your job, it is probably on my worst day. I think I'm probably having a better day than when I used to have a regular job. So on my worst day doing tech, it's still probably my best day somewhere else. So I'm still like extremely grateful. I don't want to sound, because I know Travis and I talked about this all the time. When we used to watch tech YouTubers and we didn't do it, they would always complain about these mental blocks and all these things. Mm-hmm. And you would just watch there as a viewer and you'd go, what are you talking about? You have the easiest job on the planet. You get to unbox a new product. You get to talk about it. People watch it. Oh, you got 5,000 less views than your last video. Who cares? So I get that. I 100% get it. You're watching this and you're thinking, what a bunch of babies. Hey, I'm probably agreeing with you. But there is this level of stress to it that comes, because you want to always be growing. And the minute the growth ceases or it just turns in the other direction, there's a million things in your brain going, what am I doing wrong? Am I doing anything wrong? Is it YouTube? Is it the general audience? Is it my content? Mm-hmm. And it's a hard place to get out of sometimes. I've been through this so many times at this point. But every time I go this way, it's always the same thoughts. I can't change it for whatever reason.
Yeah. You never really get used to it.
No.
Probably good. I mean, I don't want to guarantee anything. It's probably a good chance we'll be back next week. So if you enjoyed it, of course, if you're on audio podcast, you need to rate us and, you know, tell people how awesome we are, share it around, do all the things. If you're on YouTube, you know, hit subscribe by now. You've been watching us enough. Why not? You can do that. And we'll probably be back next week. Any more weddings or anything going on there next week, Greg? Yes, no, maybe so.
I hope not. I hope everyone's done with the marriage thing. You know, let's take a break on that for a year. Let's take a break on
Can we stop getting married, people? Please, just everyone.
I'm canceling all marriages from this point on. If you miss the boat by this point, you're out of luck. Sorry.
Right, love is not for you.
Yeah, love.
It's not for you.
You miss love. I'm sorry.
That boat has sailed.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to go out on this one. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate you so much. As always, he's Greg, I'm Travis, and this is GadgetCast.